Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 2 minutes after 9 a.m., January 27, 2010. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Huggins, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Thomas, and Senator Egan. We have one item today to go over, just was a brief reminder. Yesterday, we had the Revenue Commissioner Galvin give us an overview of the state's revenue picture and a high-level refresher on the primary elements dealing with our oil tax revenue, which is about 90% of our revenue. And we're going to, again, spend some time, for those that missed that meeting yesterday, we're going to spend quite a bit of time over the next 80-some days taking a look at that revenue calculations and how it impacts the state of Alaska and what's working and what may need to be reviewed. Today we have with us Ms. Karen Rayfield, who we are all very familiar with. She's the budget director for the administration, and she'll be talking today and presenting the governor's 2011 preliminary budget, beginning budget numbers, I should say. There will be some adjustments coming next week to it, and we'll see what they are when she delivers them to us, and we'll deal with them at that time. And then tomorrow we're going to have Legislative Finance Director Mr. Teal. He's going to take a look at and presenting a longer-term trend analysis to the committee and an outlook for revenue and spending. We'll be looking back roughly 5 years and going forward about 10, and we're going to try to tie in some of that information with what the Revenue Commissioner was showing us yesterday, and we'll reconcile if there's any deviation, which I expect to have substantial deviation, on the projected CBR balance of 2017 at $20 billion. And we'll see where that is going to be rather challenging to attain. But with that, I'd like to go ahead and call Ms. Rayfield forward, if she could, and she can introduce herself for the record and who she represents. And I see she's already bringing backup, but we're a friendly lot, and she should be able to roll right through those high-level numbers and with her eyes closed. Ms. Rayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Rayfield. I'm the director of the Office of Management and Budget. With me this morning is John Boucher, who is our senior economist, and he is available to help with any particular questions you might have. If I could, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to introduce to the committee Steve Hildebrand, who's in the audience this morning. He's our chief budget analyst. Steve's not new to OMB, but he's new in the position of chief budget analyst, so I just wanted you all to be familiar with Steve. And I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity this morning to talk with you about the governor's proposed FY 2011 spending plan. I know you've done a lot of work over the interim, and I know we'll be spending a lot of time together with you, your staff, and your subcommittees. Just know that OMB is here to help in any way we can as you work through the process, and we're happy to do that. My goal this morning is just to give you a very high-level view of the overall budget, and I know you'll be getting into the individual agency details with the subcommittee as you work through the process. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to go ahead and get started. The governor's number one mission, of course, is to position Alaska's economy for growth and our families for opportunity. I think you have heard him say that on several occasions. It was the overall mission that we were following as we prepared the budget request in front of you. As a planning tool, I believe that this budget does very much follow that the governor's number one mission. So how do we get there? We focused on those constitutional priorities that are very well established: education, public safety, and that includes public welfare, public health, transportation infrastructure, and then, of course, resource development. We also, within that constitutional framework and the mission that the governor laid out so clearly, was established some overall budget guidelines, and that included limiting the growth in the operating budget, focusing on results for Alaskans, what Alaskans expect state government to provide for them, and really to take a longer view, look at the impact of decisions that we're making today in the context of the long-range fiscal plan. I know that you have before you a legislative finance fiscal summary. Our next slide is just a brief snapshot of the overall spending and savings plan. So in total of the appropriations that are before you currently, all funds is about $10.7 billion. That includes our permanent fund expenditures and also those savings components of the spending plan that will be before you. Our numbers are very close to legislative finance, and we'll talk a little bit more about the recast project that we've been working with them on over the summer. And I think we're very much in alignment with where we're headed on the recast project. So
can we kind of walk through, Ms. Rayfield, can we kind of walk through this table for those watching at home and for us? I know we have a fairly short presentation today, so we have ample time and touch on some of this stuff. In particular, I think there's, you know, the designation between restricted and unrestricted general funds, and then maybe remind us what we've been doing with the restating of the GF numbers, and there's a comparison issue, so dealing with historic printouts that are, you know, dated versus what we've been working on over the interim.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. This chart, when you see the first column on the left of numbers, when it calls recast general funds, this includes both the what we have traditionally called the unrestricted general fund and also funding that has been identified through this recast project and moved from what was previously considered an other fund source to designated GF. So there are a number of funding sources and funding codes that I believe Mr. Teal will go through in some greater detail for the committee. But when you think of things like AHFC dividends or ADA dividends, things that had previously been called other funds will now appear in the general fund column. In total, that moves some $770 million from other funds into the general fund category. So for comparison purposes, it'll be important for us to make sure that we always use those same references to prior years. So we'll have to go back and redo the prior year in order to make a good comparison. But I think generally there's very few areas where we still have some questions to iron out with legislative finance. They're very minor. But in total, what we're looking at is really that general fund column, including unrestricted.
Rachel, could you pull your microphone a little closer?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we need to crank the volume up in the room.
Okay.
When we're dealing with this, just as, you know, as a side note, over the coming interim on alleged finance, and we'll be spending quite a bit of time going back several years and restating the historic numbers to take this roughly $700 million that's an adjustment, 500 or whatever it is in that ballpark range, and restate those fiscal summaries for us. So next year when we get together, we'll be able to go back and have a little better view comparatively wise of where we've been. So this process has been underway of clarifying what the general funds actually are and its impact over the last couple years, and particularly the last interim, and it'll continue because it takes a considerable amount of time to do this. So you just have to kind of bear with us this year as we, you know, have difficulty going back beyond 1 year for accurate comparisons, but we will have some condensed comparisons as we collapse the numbers. Of course, the closer you get to the top end number, the less distortions there are. But as you know, next year we're going to be looking down in the more detail of the last couple, probably 4 or 5 years, and then we'll take a good review of that budget when it's on the table. So this year we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants, so to speak, dealing with that. But if you can go ahead and continue.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, I would also like to say that in going forward, there are a couple of key components of our budget development that are going to need to be refreshed also with the new fund code project, and that's our performance framework and our long-range fiscal plan, which, of course, were built on the current model, not the recast. So we have some work on our side to make those forward-looking components mesh with the new fund code project as well. So it's not only going back, but also going forward. Mr. Chairman, I will get into some of the elements of this chart as we go into the next slide, but just high level, you can see this is expenditures broken out by agency operations, what we typically include in that. That also includes some of the formula programs that we'll go into more detail on the next slide. Our statewide pieces, capital budget, and then those transfers and savings, and I will go into those when we get into the pie chart, which why don't we go ahead and go there right now. The biggest drivers, I think, of our spending growth over time are going to be in our formula programs. And those are statutorily designated programs and increases in the budget. I'd like to start on this pie chart with K-12 education, which is sort of the burgundy color slice on the left-hand side of the pie chart. Education, as you know, is a significant component of our budget. It's about 11% of the total, $1.1 billion. This serves and goes to approximately 53 school districts in the state and 130,000 students. The budget proposal before you fully funds the K-12 formula, and it includes about a $56 million increase from the current year. This continues the three-year education plan. It increases the base student allocation $100. There's an increase also in intensive student fundings and the continuing implementation of the district cost factor adjustment in that formula. So all of that's included in the FY11 budget that's before you. The other formula component, about $1.5 billion and 14% of the budget, is largely our Medicaid component. As you know, the big drivers of Medicaid cost increases have to do with enrollment in the program, with utilization, and with costs of providing those services. We served about 123,000 Alaskans in Medicaid in fiscal year 2009.
Chairman, Senator Hoffman.
Going back to the education, that increases, the final increase of the BSA by $100.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, that's correct.
And I think that is significant. That's probably the largest component of the increase is the $100 increase of the BSA, of the formula.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, that is a key component of it. The intensive needs portion also goes from 11 times the base student allocation to 13 times. So that is also a significant component of the increase.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next slice of the pie, the capital budget, is about $1.5 billion, or 14% of the total budget. There are some key pieces in that budget I want to highlight for you this morning, and I know we'll get into some more details. Resource development, of course, continues to be a high priority for the governor. A piece of this includes $150 million for the AGIA reimbursement. We are including in our total budget package not only the effort needed to continue work on the AGIA project, but also on in-state gas, and you'll see in our operating budget the increased proposed spending for the in-state gas line project as well. But within the capital budget, we have the AGIA reimbursement piece. The governor has also highlighted $100 million for deferred maintenance, which is the beginning of a five-year plan of addressing state, agency, and university facility deferred maintenance. Recently, the governor has requested that the legislature consider jump-starting that $100 million by moving it up to an immediate effective date. And you will see that in the supplementals that come out to you next week. As you all know, Alaska has a number of buildings, about 2,300 statewide that are public buildings, and about a $1.8 billion backlog of deferred maintenance. The governor's interest, of course, is not only fixing what we have, but getting the funds available for our contractors to be working on a number of projects, everything from plumbing and heating to roofing to road work. There's just an awful lot of work that needs to get done, and we can keep our medium and small contractors working if we get this money out on the street. Also included in the capital budget is a request for the $75 million crime lab and about $109 million for the University of Alaska Life Sciences building. That will also come to you in a request to approve certificates of our participation. That piece of legislation is Senate Bill 226, and I believe it's in your committee at this time. Also, the capital budget includes the general fund necessary to capture our federal highway and aviation programs, and also continue to maintain the Dalton Highway, which is important, as you know, to our efforts up on the North Slope. Governor's requesting some funding to open access to the Umiat and Foothills area, to open resource development there. About $8 million is requested in the budget before you. And we've also included $25 million for the Renewable Energy Fund.
Senator Hoffman, and then Senator Huckabee.
The $8 million for Umiat, is that phased funding, or, and if so, what's the total dollar amount, and how many years is that supposed to be phased at?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, the $8 million is about half of what's needed to do the environmental impact work on the road. I cannot tell you the total dollar amount of the project, but I do know that it is phased, and we can get the project outlined for you.
And that primarily is to get access to NPRA?
It's, as I understand it, it's the Gubik area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, you mentioned the federal match. Could you say what the two numbers were for federal match? I didn't catch those.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, the federal match, federal general fund match in our budget is for the federal highway and aviation, I believe, is just about $50 million, and that gives us the general fund needed to capture about $700 million, I believe, in federal highway and aviation program funds that come to Alaska, and I'll get you the exact numbers. There's also funding, general fund match in there for our Village Safe Water program. There's about $23 million, I believe, of state general fund in the budget for the federal Village Safe Water program.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. On the acceleration in the time to move the $100 million of deferred maintenance into the FY10 supplemental, for those watching at home, it's just we actually run almost two operating budgets, one in the beginning of the process and then one halfway through the year, which is right now for the current fiscal year. So it's a budget that isn't necessarily fast in time, but fast as far as effective dates, and so we can fix any problems within the budget as we go on oversights or changes that were unforeseen. In this case, there'll be a request apparently from the governor to accelerate some capital spending. Is that going to then be deducted out of the 11 capital budget presentation, or will we have a request for FY10 supplemental for 100 and then also a request for an additional 100 in the 11 capital budget?
Mr. Chairman, we've been discussing that. The governor's interest was really to get the first installment of the $100 million that he proposed for 11 jump started. One of the things we are talking about now is whether or not we would go ahead and make the FY11 request that's before you currently the second year installment, or if we just want to jump start 11. When you see the supplemental bills come out, we have a due date of February 2nd to bring you the supplemental bill, and also a due date of February 17th to bring you the budget amendments. And we'll clarify our position on that at that time, because we're still discussing it.
Okay, that's fair. Also, if we could back up what we're talking about, these type of issues, if we could back up to slide 3.
Slide 3.
You know, the first bullet point, it says focus on mandated priorities, the Constitution, education, public safety, and resource development. I know a lot of times in conversations it's thrown out as also in the Constitution is transportation, which it's really not in there directly, but it is definitely linked to a provision in there that requires a particular percentage to be spent on capital. So the operating budget over time doesn't consume our entire budget, and we have no money for water, sewer, and roads and bridges and our basic infrastructure. So what I'd like to hear from the administration over the next few weeks is how you define that as the administration. that clause, so we can keep an eye on that issue over time, because there is concern that we'll see over the next several days as we lay out the operating budget, the impact the operating budget has in slowing down our economic development in the future, diverting too much into operating and not enough into infrastructure, potentially.
Mr. Chairman, I know that that has been an ongoing conversation for several years, the constitutional discussion about how much should be allocated for the capital budget. We have looked at that, and I know we've talked about it in the context of our 10-year planning discussion as well. We know there are several key drivers that we're going to have to look at very carefully between our formula program increases that are typically operating related, our debt service components, and our component having to do with paying down the unfunded liability. Those are all, I think, significant areas that we need to discuss. We also have talked about a portion of the operating budget that is ongoing, and it's our debt service basically for capital projects. So that's a key component that we need to look at as well in context of that constitutional requirement.
So we have contributions coming of some goodies for the committee. Well, Chairman will work that out to make sure it's healthy for us. It's not a conspiracy to do us in. But just to remind everybody to shut their cell phones off, if they could, please. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rayfield, I was wondering how the governor's revenue sharing aspect was coming out, and that it was just going to stay at $60 million, or we're hoping for a little more to try and get it up toward 50% of that more. Can you just address the revenue sharing aspect?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, at this moment, what we have in the budget before you is $60 million. Mm-hmm. In the 10-year planning model that is or will be before you very soon, it is also built in at $60 million. That is another key area where we'll have to look at over time. What can the state reasonably continue to provide to communities? We know we have a significant investment in education and also in our unfunded liability and what we've agreed to pay for our communities. So there's a number of things I think that are going to be important for us to discuss in that arena, but we have not come out with a recommendation for you on increasing revenue sharing at this point.
For this coming fiscal year?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was good to hear the governor in his State of the State address state that he wanted to work on construction of schools in rural Alaska, primarily to address the Kazaili case, and I wonder if there's any comments that you would like to say regarding his comments made at the State of the State.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, actually, yes, I do have a slide in here where we, I think the governor has been clear both when he rolled out the budget in December and again in the State of the State that he is very interested in working with the legislature on school construction. And one of the proposals that he mentioned was in our savings and investments using the potential surplus in FY10 that we look there and work with the legislature on that.
Right, follow up?
Follow up, you know, I think that what people in rural Alaska are, although they're interested in school construction this year, more so I think is trying to find a longer term solution to resolve the Kazaili case. You know, this is, I think the governor is the first governor since this decision came down some 10 years ago that is willing to work on the Kazaili case, but it's a long-standing case that I think can have a lot of political implications, because I went back and looked at at least the top 10 schools that are on the list, and they exceed 98% of their students are Alaska Native, and you know, I find that for us and for the administration to ignore that case is a mistake, and I would say that we need to try to find a long-term solution to address construction of schools You know, I think that we had a bill introduced by Senator Betty Davis to extend the program that existed in the past that addresses school construction for urban areas. And I don't have any problem with that. We've passed that many times, but we need to face the fact that all children of the state of Alaska need to have adequate schools to learn in. And I think this year, I think, is a good year to try to address that problem.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, I believe that the governor is sincere in his interest in working on this issue with you, and he has been talking about the Casile case with his attorney general and with his commissioner of education and with the legislature as well. So I think he is very interested in pursuing this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead and continue.
Mr. Chairman, if we go back to the pie chart, the permanent fund is also
Senator Thomas is just, he's got a good question for you. I don't know what it is, but he's squirming in his chair.
Not necessarily, thank you, Mr. Chairman, not much of a question, actually, but more of a request that maybe we could take a look, not necessarily right now, at certificates of participation and other types of bonding. I'm not sure if you had that on the agenda, but maybe early on before we get too bogged down in some areas, because I understand there are some provisions of the Recovery Act that allow some other types of bonds that may be useful in our purposes as we move forward this year. So I think particularly with buildings such as the crime lab and life sciences. So if we could just maybe get a better feel for what's potentially available and the rates of those would be interesting to me anyhow. So.
I think that's a good idea. I think maybe what we should do is come back with just a special presentation and take a look at the bonding indebtedness of the state, different mechanisms for financing available to us, from cash to certificates of participation or and all the other litany of stuff, just kind of as a refresher for everybody, and then definitely a review of the bonded status of the state. And we also need to have a discussion of what kind of debt level do we want to have as we accumulate cash, if we want to pay off debt or put more on, the advantages and disadvantages of different strategies. So I think that's a good question, and we'll tax ledge finance to work on that, and we'll interface with OMB, and we can wrap that in with the projections of coming attractions for the state over the next several years.
Mr. Chairman, I'm certain that Devin Mitchell, our state debt manager, would be happy to be part of that presentation. And we can sure work with you on that. So, Mr. Chairman, continuing to just give you a high-level view, the permanent fund, of course, is a key component of our spending plan for the next year, about $1.5 billion, 14%. This includes the amount necessary for both our permanent fund dividends and also inflation proofing based on projections from the Permanent Fund Corporation.
And then on that, are you using zero for inflation in your budget, or what?
In 11, we are using, look at John real quick.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Boucher, senior economist with OMB. For the FY11 projections, there is inflation proofing, but for FY10, there is no projected inflation proofing.
Okay.
The next, I'm sorry.
Senator Hoffman.
And it's good to hear from John Boucher. Every year he comes before this committee, he looks more and more like his father.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, thank you very much. And by the way, it would have been my father's 89th birthday today.
Oh, wow.
So, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next piece is the transfers and savings. And this is an area, this is basically representing a net of a number of things going on. So I just want to highlight it for the committee, and we can talk more about it later. But generally, this is where we're talking about forward funding education, the governor's proposal to set aside $400 million for the governor's performance scholarship, and also where we're taking money out of savings because we're proposing to spend about $177 million out of the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation for those gas line-related expenditures that I talked about earlier. So we have not only the amount of money that we need to fund public education in 11 coming out of the account, we're proposing to put about the same amount of money back in for FY12. So it's the net of several things happening in that one particular line of the budget. As you know, the governor's proposal for the $400 million is that, with, of course, the approval of the legislature to establish the governor's performance scholarship, we would set aside that $400 million and then use the earnings from that to pay the scholarships. And the program, you may be aware of, is specifically to increasing academic rigor in our high schools, improving graduation rates, and then also student success should they choose to go on to college or to vocational programs. So the requirement would be they would complete 4 years of math, science, and language arts, and also 3 years of social studies. And then depending on how well they do, they would receive a scholarship program. So again, this is the goal is to have our kids have better success, that we have a trained, skilled workforce, and hopefully more of our children will stay in Alaska, work in Alaska, and raise their families here. The big portion of the pie there representing agency non-formula is about $3.9 billion total, roughly 36% of the budget. This is basically all of our state agencies, the University of Alaska, the court system, and the legislature. As we have said, the governor did very much limit growth in the operating budget. I think as you start looking at the individual agency budgets, you will see that there was very little in the way of increases in their budgets. They will be asked to absorb fixed costs in many areas. We have proposed the increasing the fuel trigger, as you see in the language of the budget based on the revenue forecast. That fuel trigger that then gets allocated to various departments is up to $42 million in our proposed budget from the $33 million we expect for the current year. Power cost equalization is also included in this slice of the pie. We're fully funding power cost equalization at about $36 million. Heating assistance programs, both the federal component under the low-income heating assistance program and then the state heating assistance program are in these numbers. One area of the budget that the governor has talked about increasing on the operating side is in the area of public safety and the domestic violence and sexual assault prevention initiative. Two departments are, you will see, proposed budget increases in public safety and the Department of Law. And that includes village public safety officers, increases, some investigators, some training. We are also providing additional resources for shelter programs and also some funding in the Department of Law for rural prosecution. So there are several pieces in the budget, in the operating budget, that will increase our requested spend for that particular initiative. Under statewide appropriations, this is where you see $882 million, about 8% of the budget. This is where we make the deposit for the unfunded liability. And this, in the proposed budget for next year, it's $358 million, roughly, that will be going into that account. Then also debt service, our state debt service costs, $276 million. And then this is where the revenue sharing will appear in the budget is under statewide, and it's in at $60 million.
If we could just pause there for a second, just a quick thing, I remembered on Senator Thomas's earlier question. I think we also want to look at the rates of our bonded indebtedness to see if there's any way, you know, we could possibly either refinance some or just get rid of some or what have you in that discussion. But I'd also like to point out, and for those at the table that have the fiscal summary on line 22 is where you have the oil and gas investment credits. And yesterday when we had the discussion, our total credits were over $500 million. And the difference there is that 120% credit. I just want to point that out because there's a huge difference, and that's where one of the issues lies. There's some credits that aren't reflected, but we'll get into that a little later. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rayfield, can you break down the debt service of the $276 million and how much of that is going towards school debt service in 2011's budget?
Mr. Chairman, we can certainly get you the debt schedule. It's actually published on our website as well, but I can get that for you. I don't have it here in front of me.
I believe for the first time that number is going to exceed $100 million this next year.
Is it, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, Mr. Boucher's saying it's about 106.
That's, I believe, mm-hmm. Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I believe that's the number for
106 million?
Yes, I believe so. I'll double check that number though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we'll break down that debt, the debt service, to not only major categories but individual projects when we go into it, and we'll spend some time on that. I think there's also a question on the cost of the debt for the prison, and if there's some way we can deal with, try to get that down in the near future.
Mr. Chairman, and certainly that's broken out in the debt summary as well, the amount for Goose Creek. Mr. Chairman, the next slide has to do with, and I know Commissioner Galvin was here yesterday and highlighted the revenue forecast and walked you through how his department calculates the revenue forecast. The reason for this slide is just to give you, again, a sense of the improvement in the forecast from the spring to the fall, and what we're looking at in terms of both the FY10 projection for revenue and FY11. We know currently, you know, oil has stayed above $70 a barrel. Today I think it's about 75. If that continues, it's likely there will be even more surplus available at the end of fiscal year 10. And I think we all agree that an important part of our long-range plan is to really utilize and save funds when we have that opportunity to do so, because we know over time we will be required to use some of our savings accounts to continue to provide our core services. So I just wanted to highlight this again for you, that we are anticipating a surplus in 10 and 11, and the governor has clearly proposed what he believes we should be doing with that in 10 and 11, and I'd like to go to the next slide.
Chairman, Senator Hoffman.
On that point, I believe that what the governor proposed in forward funding education, which in my view is savings, is appropriating $1.15 billion to forward fund education, which is put in an account and I think can be classified as savings. Is the viewpoint of the administration as well, because that's what the Senate majority is interested in accomplishing this next year.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, yes, the administration believes that putting this money aside for the next year is appropriate when we have the opportunity to do that, and we do count it in our savings component of that. So when we look at the potential surplus for both the current year and the next fiscal year, and you will see in the supplemental bill that we release next week a deposit into the public education fund to save it for 11. And then, of course, we already have that deposit requested in the 12 or in the 11 budget. Then you'll also see then that there will be additional funding available. And as we talked about earlier, the governor has stated that he's very interested in working with the legislature on that investment of that additional surplus, and rural school construction is something that he wants to talk with the legislature about. In 12, again, the forward funding is an important component of the savings plan, along with setting aside the $400 million for the performance scholarship, and then there would still be a surplus that could then go into our savings account at the end of the year.
Just for a point of quick clarity on, for those at home that are watching, last spring, unfortunately, the legislature didn't forward fund education in that budget. So this is a catch-up provision, actually, so we can keep on track. So we always have 1 year of funding of K-12 land ahead of us.
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, a key component of our budget development has been, and I think it's important to you as well, results. Really re-engaging in the whole discussion of results and results-based budgeting. As you know, Governor Parnell was very active in that effort when he was in the legislature. he had his agencies come forward and really rejuvenate their effort in this area. And I think as you go through the individual agency budgets, you will see an effort to go back, revisit the missions, make sure it's consistent with what the statutory provisions are for the various departments and programs, making sure that they're focusing their core services, activities, and basically their targets on what those statutory frameworks are. We've done a lot of work in OMB and with the agencies in our budget system, really trying to make some system enhancements to make it a little bit more seamless in the budget process so it isn't quite so manual. We've got some new reports that I think will be helpful to the legislature. We had departments align their priority programs and statewide priorities and then actually go through and allocate their existing resources and capacity across those priority areas. So I think it'll be a much more relevant view of the budget and a view for you to have the conversation in context of what they are responsible for producing for Alaskans. So the governor has been very engaged in that, the agency has, and I think you will be seeing some improvements in that area as you start really getting into the details of the individual agency budgets.
When we listened to the comments from the governor, or at least when I listened to the comments from the governor and I heard him reference a request from the agencies for a 10% change or 10% growth factor in a year where we have no inflation, I thought rather disturbing. And I think it points to the challenge that we're going to have in the legislature the next couple of years, struggling with our operating budget to keep it in line with our revenue and in line where we don't have to in the several years in the future make draconian cuts to it.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. I think some of our challenges has been that in many cases we're probably going to need to look at changing the way we deliver service, because I think if you look at the 10-year picture, state agencies are going to have to do business differently if they're going to be able to manage within an acceptable level of funding for us to be able to build in over a longer period of time, particularly as we look at some of those big drivers that are going to continue to increase in our formula areas and our unfunded liability. So it is going to be a significant challenge for us, and I think that's why when you look at the overall principles, and we'll get into that a little bit in the 10-year plan with a slide in the next slide, but it is going to be a significant challenge for us.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that same point, yesterday we heard from the Commissioner of Revenue, Pat Galvin, regarding the CBR and having that savings account grow, I think it's 2017 to in excess of $21 billion. And I know the governor in his State of the State said that we have a savings account that's going to last for 10 years, but I think we need to be more realistic in some of the assumptions and in the assumptions that were given by the Department of Revenue with, I think it was a 2 or 3% growth in the operating budget and a status quo capital budget of right around $600 million are unrealistic, and to portray to the public that we're going to have savings of $21 billion is in the CBR is quite misleading, and we need to be more realistic in our assumptions so that we are, I believe, more truthful in the savings account, because that is a very important component of what our caucus has stated in repaying that the savings account. The CBR, I think Senator Ellis started that several years ago, and I did not believe that in my tenure in the legislature we would ever repay the CBR, and we are going to accomplish that this next year, but to say that fund now is going to grow to $21 billion and by the year 2014 or 2017 is is portraying a false picture to the public, and we need to have better assumptions and more realistic assumptions so that that the projections of that savings account are more truthful to the general public.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, I agree. There are several things when you get into looking at the 10-year plan. What we try to do is there's a number of scenarios that will be in front of you. Clearly, you know, looking out 10 years is difficult from anyone's point of view, and I think the assumption that the commissioner was speaking to yesterday is if there was a 3% growth and that was it would look that's the picture you would paint. There, as you get into the 10-year plan, there are several things. There are baseline scenarios. There is an initiative scenario. There's one that has to do with gas lines. So you can see under different scenarios what various expenditures might look like at any given point in time. So I think our challenge will be really talking about those in terms of the timelines, when, because we know we're going to need to make some investments in infrastructure in to get the gas line project and the infrastructure developed. So there will be changes along the way. It's not going to be a flat 3% picture. So I agree that the public should not be misled by that. But I think there are several things, and the value of the 10-year plan is looking at over a long-term horizon. What are those pressure points going to be, and how are we going to address them? And under the various scenarios, you can see the impacts then on the savings accounts over that period of time.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Ms. Rahfel, I enjoy there's one piece here on slide 3 which lists the budget guidelines and focus on priorities mandated by the Constitution. And the last element is resource development. And then you go to your, if you'll go back now to your slide number 8, which we were just looking at, if systems changes, and it talks about aligning agencies and state priorities. And yesterday we met with Mr. Gallagher on what some of us think is a state priority in state gas. And we'd be very interested in how we're aligning agencies in the priority of the state and where that falls as a priority to the state. And I see it as a statewide issue, not just an issue for the rail belt, because we want to gasify the whole state to the extent we can. But I'm glad to see that you put that there, but also would like to have some accountability that we're in fact doing that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, absolutely. And the in-state gas project does align with the resource development priority at the state level. You'll see in the budget we have funding to continue that effort with our new in-state gas line coordinator. It's about $6.5 million. We also will be in the supplemental bill that comes before you next week asking for your approval to extend the appropriation that was made for the current year, because that appropriation expires in February. So we're going to continue our efforts on both the in-state line and the large line. So that is a high priority.
A follow-up, Senator Huggins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, there was some money left over at this point in time, it was funded up until February. It would be interesting to see what that number is. I think it's probably $4 or $5 million in addition. So that calculation. But most importantly, agency alignment is a very key piece to following through with the priority, and we'd be interested in that as we go along.
Absolutely.
Go ahead and continue.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go then to our next slide, which has to do with the long-range fiscal plan, and I know we've talked about that a little bit here, but what we're really talking about is the overarching principles for developing that plan has to do with responsible resource development. We have to develop Alaska's natural resources, including our oil and gas, our minerals, mining, fishing, tourism, increasing revenue from these various resources that are available to us. We need to look at restraining the growth in the operating budget. I think all of us at the table have that in mind as we go forward. We do need to save it when as much as we can, because we know over time we're going to need to draw on reserves in order to continue to provide essential services that folks expect. The assumptions, again, we had that big statewide level picture of the 3% growth rate, very minimal. There's also, again, the other scenarios that we talked about that we'll get into in some detail that have to do with the initiatives, gas line, other infrastructure developments that will need to happen over time. The challenges that we face, I think, are fairly clear. I'm sure there will be things that are unknowns at the moment that will present themselves, but we know that formula programs, and particularly K-12 education and Medicaid, will continue to grow. We do need to invest in infrastructure development. We do need to address our unfunded liability, and those are all significant pieces that will have to be part of any long-range view of the world.
Ms. Rayfield, when we go into the forecast, the 10-year plan, and we take a look at that, I would like to see if we couldn't spend a little bit of time taking a look at what the committee looked at several years ago. 2, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, what have you, of coming attractions, because I remember presentations a couple of governors ago when I first got to the legislature showing zero growth, which is even lower than three. And I don't think we're even any close to three if we times it by three, maybe even four. So I think it'd be good to take a look at some of those forecasts, because we do that in a lot of the other reviews we do. And see how close we are and where those trend lines are. And maybe the committee here might want to have a few adjustments made themselves and individually have some numbers run so we can get kind of a feel for the risk level out in front of us under different scenarios versus just a linear, like 8% growth rate or some other growth rate that is an example. They give us 8.25% on a lot of the investment returns and they have a difficulty in giving us a band range. So I think we're going to look at more of a banded range than a particular linear extrapolation.
Mr. Chairman, John Boucher would like to have a comment on this.
Mr. Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, too, that one important assumption that wasn't mentioned here, too, is we are going off the fall 2009 revenue forecast, and as you know, there are different scenarios out there, and you can't ignore the revenue picture either. And so we focused a lot of this discussion on different possibilities in terms of the expenditure side of the equation, but we also need to be mindful that there are different revenue scenarios as well, and probably those are even more important if you look at the 10-year plan.
If I could just, and then I'll go to Senator Hoffman. Senator Hoffman and myself spend some time, I don't want to say a considerable amount of time, but there is several meetings to the legislative process where we actually sit down together and change the revenue number, the oil price number, looking at the targeted price, volume, and dollar outcome given to us by revenue, because production, they're pretty close on production, and oil price is difficult. And we actually do a banded range when we sit here and work on our budgets. So even though we have difficulty with the enthusiasm of some presenters to give us that data, we actually generate it ourselves. So we have a good feeling for what we're doing at this table and how much excess revenue we may have or if there's potentially going to be a high risk of a shortfall, and we try to address it. And I try to encourage the presenters to get away from the linear projection and start giving us bands so we can get a feel for, is the band tight on revenue and expenses, or is it very broad? And then we can have the policy discussion here on how we want to handle that exposure. But if we don't recognize his exposure, we could get ourselves in a pickle. So, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comments are under your guiding principles regarding Alaska's natural resources. One is fisheries, and I think that everyone at this table is well aware of our constitutional mandate for managing fisheries to the maximum sustainable
yield
Yield possible. And there are, I guess, several areas of the state, but South Central is experiencing problems in accessing fish, and the Yukon, you know, is experiencing for the first time. We've seen restrictions on even subsistence catches, and I was wondering if I did not see anything in the fish and game budget to try to address this, because 4 and 5 years from now we're going to see the same problems on the Yukon, and the people on the Yukon are heavily dependent upon this resource, not only for additional income, but to put food on their table, and it would seem that we need to assess what we're doing on management of our fisheries resources in the state to see if we are really fulfilling the obligation, constitutional obligation. And it seems as though if we were truly doing that, we wouldn't be experiencing the problems that we're seeing in South Central and on the Yukon. So it seems to me that we need to fully assess what we're doing and get back to what our Constitution said we were supposed to be doing, so we are not in the dilemmas that we're currently in specifically in South Central and on the Yukon, because I've seen the problems that Senator Olson had up in Norton Sound. Now they're going down to the Yukon, and I'm fearful that that trend will continue down the Kuskokwim and Bristol Bay, and we need to assess where we're going with our management of our fisheries resources and turn that around. You know, we've, as a state, that was one of our primary reasons for becoming a state, and it seems as though somewhere along the way we've lost that that direction, and I would like for us to put some money into that effort to try to turn the tide in that area, and I don't, you know, I think that that needs to be a major issue, because all Alaskans want us to have strong runs, you know, the sports fishermen, the subsistence fishermen, and the commercial fishermen, and I think that our budget needs to reflect that, what Alaskans want. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, Senator Hoffman, I know that of course the Commissioner of Fish and Game would be very, very willing to engage in the conversation with you. I do know that there are some specific items proposed in the 11 budget related to the Yukon River fishery and a sonar, a pilot station, some salmon management enhancement activities in Fish and Game's budget. So I'm certain that the department will be very interested in talking with you about those.
Those efforts are well and good and have good intentions, but all they're going to do is to identify the problem and what the magnitude of that problem is. What I'm interested in doing is turning it around as soon as possible. What is the department going to do to turn that around 4 years from now, when we know that we've had low stocks this last summer, and we because of that brood stock being very, very low, 80% lower than what is anticipated, what are we going to do to turn that around 4 years from now? Putting money in for sonars, we're going to verify the fact that the runs are low. But what are we doing in the budget to turn that around, to replenish those stocks? That's what I'm talking about, and I'm pretty sure that the people in South Central want to see what we're doing in the budget to turn the stocks around in that area as well, to put money into the budget to verify a problem that we know exists, and to find out the magnitude of that problem is one thing, and it's a good step, but it's to verify stuff, and we need to be proactive in this area.
Understand. Thank you.
Senator Huggins, and then Senator Egan, did you have a question? Okay. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll restrain myself, but I would like to echo what we're hearing from Senator Hoffman. And he mentioned South Central, and I happen to know a little bit about that, and it's frightening, the trend line. And we, as Senator Hoffman adequately described, we're monitoring the trend line. We're verifying the trend line. And we're not taking any substantial action. And we know that in this case, there's about $1.6 billion worth of tourist activities that happen. And the bag limit goes down continually. The number of fish go down continually to, quite frankly, we have stocks of concern, and we have all sorts of adjectives, if you will, to describe what's happening, but no action. And now we're into discussion about the reliability of sonars and that sort of thing. Well, that doesn't help the number of fish. That just verifies the number that aren't coming. Unfortunately, myself and my son could sit there and on some banks and count all day and verify that on one hand or so how many are going through, because there aren't many of them. So I just echo that Senator Hoffman hit something that's near and dear to many regions of the state, and it's time for some action to be taken. And I think there's willpower of people sitting around this table to be a partner in that. But we want action, not just distribution of money and verification.
If I could just, you know, for the folks at home, we're talking about a $70 million rounded off operating budget for fish and game out of roughly $4.3 billion. Some budget components to give it, you know, K-12 is what, $1.2 billion, something like that. Hess is somewhere up in that arena, and then the university's pushing 700 or something. Just to give people kind of a scale of what we're talking about, we'll have some of these numbers up on the screen, but there is an interest not only in sport fish and subsistence fisheries, but also in commercial fisheries dealing with the fish and game. So we'll have a lively discussion as we go around the table from Kwikulet to Western Alaska to Southeast. So we'll stay tuned. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rayfield, I think with the, first of all, I totally agree with the previous two senators' evaluation that confirming something that's there is not necessarily what we're looking for. But I think another aspect is that there's research that's going on that's somewhat ignored by the Department of Fish and Game. We talked to Dr. John White, and he had some research and some recommendations that I don't think were necessarily taken to heart and had some, because up on the Seward Peninsula, we haven't had a commercial fisheries in over 20 years. And when I was going to college, I was a commercial fisherman there. And so when you see the devastation that's gone on a small scale and realize it can go on a much larger scale there on the Yukon and go on down to Bristol Bay, I guess it causes us to quake in our feet to see what the trend is doing. And so, but I think it goes back, my idea is that it goes back to research that is largely being ignored. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
Mr. Chairman, I will go on to the next slide. And this has, and I'll just touch on this very briefly, the Fund Code project that has been an effort now over the past few months of the summer, really led by legislative finance, has three basic components to it. And I'm not going to get into the weeds here because I think that the committee will work on this with the subcommittees and with Mr. Teal. But basically three areas. We're changing the way we deal with prior year appropriations and carry forward language, changing the way we talk about fund transfers and savings, and then the general fund designations that we talked about a little bit at the beginning of the discussion. We are working with Ledge Finance on that. I think that we're pretty close to aligned on all of the elements of it. We still have some system challenges on our side to get it fully implemented. So, for example, when you see the supplemental budget bill next week, our bill writer doesn't have the ability to incorporate the new fund code roll-ups. But I'm not worried about that because I know that legislative finance is working with the finance committees to make sure that the information that we transmit to you will be transitioned to the new fund code project. So I just wanted to point that out. Our implementation timelines are a little bit behind you because we have to do some programming and some changes in our system. So anyway, we're on board. We're working with you on that. And just want to make sure as we go through, when there are inevitably some differences in a comparison point or something else, let's just be careful about what's in the number and we can sort it out. So.
And if I could just add a little bit, we've had some discussions before the session, the four co-chairs along with the OMB office, that we know there's these discrepancies that are going to crop up and we're going to try to all synchronize. So we're talking about the same numbers, and then we can have a policy discussion. Otherwise, we get distracted into is a 0.5 or 0.75 change, and it's we don't get anything done.
But I just wanted to say that I think Ledge Finance has done a great job putting this together and putting an implementation plan in place. So we're going to work all the way through that, and we are talking about our getting our fiscal summary to match up to yours, and when we would probably produce a new one would be after budget amendments. But we're just not quite there yet, and I'll continue to work with Mr. Teal on that. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, we know that the budget that's before you today is the starting point. We know there's a couple of more milestones here with the supplemental and then with the budget amendments to come to you, and we're going to do whatever we can to work with you on this budget as it goes through the process. So.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the bipartisan working group, there was one area that we felt was quite important, and that was the high cost of energy that all Alaskans are facing from all corners of Alaska. And I think that Alaskans would have liked to see, energy, addressing the high cost of energy a little bit higher priority. We passed a law just a couple of short years ago, just one example on, alternative energy. And we said that we were going to spend $50 million a year on that program. Last year, the governor, she proposed a reduction in that program, and the legislature went along with that, primarily because the revenue projections at that time were quite low. But today, I think that has turned around. And I believe, for starters, we should at least be spending the $50 million on the legislation that we had passed and signed into law just two short years ago as a start. But I think this finance committee authored a study on trying to address, trying to look at what's happening in the state of Alaska and energy, and we're going to be having that report submitted probably in the middle of February. But I think Alaskans are still interested in what the state of Alaska can do to address the high cost of energy. There are many long-term proposals. There's many projects out there, but it seems as though part of the overview should have been to address the high cost of energy. We made that a priority, and I think that we as a state, as a Senate, are going to try to pursue that and work with this administration to see what we can do to address that concern, because I think that continues to be on the forefront of all Alaskans' minds, how expensive it is to live in this state, and energy being the largest portion of that cost, from South Central, the supply side, to the people paying $6 to $7 to $8 a gallon to run their snow machine and four-wheelers in rural Alaska. So I think we need to work with the administration to try to address this issue that is in the forefront of Alaskans.
We have any final questions for OMB? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Ms. Rayfield, looking at the budget guidance which you're operating under, says position Alaska's economy for growth and Alaska's families for opportunity, which is a worthy task, and I'm sure that people around this table want to partner with you in that effort. And it just brings to mind to me, remember Massachusetts, because what I'm hearing from some people from the Chamber of Commerce's and the business community, that their confidence level about the actions about where may or may not take create some heartburn for them. And done in the context of, we know nationally and internationally around the globe, there are some economic challenges, to say the least. Unfortunately for us, we had negative growth this past year, the first time in 20-some years, as I recall. And that alarms me if we aren't addressing some of the symptoms. And I just take tourism as an example, which is significant in the area in which I live and represent. And it appears to continue to be eroded. And I'm looking for a number of areas to be able to partner with the agencies and the state in this alignment, if you will, to accomplish some of those economic pieces, because we do not need a declining economic performance in our state. And I think most of us remember the 80s, and it wasn't fun. And I would rather us to be proactive in addressing those. And I'm sitting here today telling you that what I'm hearing from a significant number of people in the business community, that they are concerned. I listened to Mr. Scott Goldsmith describe what he sees as symptomatic of the economy. He's concerned. Unemployment is up. So the indicators are there. Let's accomplish this task, but let's do it proactively, and we want to be engaged in solutions to the process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions before we finish today? I'd like to go ahead and thank Ms. Rayfield for her presentation and her staff for assisting her, even though I'm sure she can answer all the questions without any help. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, as the individual in charge of the operating budget, I look forward to working with the administration. You know, I think that the governor has set out some ambitious goals in the operating budget, although it is quite tight. This committee is interested in working with the administration to provide the services that Alaskans expect of the state of Alaska within the budget confines that we have. And we look forward to this session in a very cooperative working relationship with the Third Floor.
Thank you.
And that's similar views from the capital side. When we move into the capital budget, we spent the last couple of years working the capital budget looking at employment, concerned about that, and making sure DOT had enough projects in the chute to keep things going. It appears that our highways, our dirt workers have been fairly busy the last couple of years, but we've had a issue with some of the building side of things, so there'll be some discussions there. But we'll work with the administration to make sure that we continue to be an anomaly amongst the 50 states as they struggle with their economic woes, and we debate the structure and status of our savings. That we'll see everybody tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We'll start with Ledge Finance, and we'll start taking a more detailed look at our budget. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.